to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He's Paul DiTino. I'm Lance Meadow. Good to be with you for the next 60 minutes as we'll be breaking down all that is happening with respect to the New York Giants. Two ways to interact with us here on the program. You could dial us up at 201-939-4513. You could also reach out on Twitter using hashtag GiantsChat. Later on in the program, we'll be joined by former Giants corner Sam Madison, who helped the Giants win one of their two recent Super Bowls. So we'll be looking forward to that. And he played for Steve Spagnuolo during his first stint as defensive coordinator, so we'll get his perspective on what it was like to play with Spags.
Yeah, Spags, you know, when he was with the Giants in 2007 and 2008, really relied on some very important key veterans to kind of make sure that they kept the glue together on this team, obviously on the defensive side of the ball, since that was his job. And guys like Sam Madison and R.W. McQuarters were very, very important parts of that. So I think it's a great get that Sam, who's now part of the Dolphins broadcast team, is able to give us some time today.
And he was a coach here with the Giants in the 2013 offseason.
That is
so
correct.
So he's had multiple ties to this organization. We'll get his perspective on a variety of different things a little bit later on in the program. We will be getting to your phone calls in a bit, as well as your tweets. But let's start off with the most relevant news connected to the Giants, and that has to do with the Pro Bowl. Odell Beckham Jr., the first rookie taken. He was selected by Michael Irvin's team, the fourth overall pick. Day one, they went through the offensive linemen, some of the other less than dazzling players, and then yesterday they went to the big-time players in terms of the quarterbacks, the wide receivers, and the running backs, and Odell Beckham was taken with the fourth overall pick. Andrew Luck was the first pick, then Tony Romo was taken by Michael Irvin's team. They countered with A.J. Green for Chris Carter, and then Odell Beckham was selected. So a notable achievement, considering he wowed everybody throughout the course of the regular season. No surprise that he went that early, and he's going to be catching passes from Tony Romo of the Dallas Cowboys.
Well, you know, the two things that I'm looking forward to this weekend, first of all, is the official NFL Rookie of the Year announcements, which will be coming out on Saturday night at the NFL Honors Program. NBC is going to be televising that. Now, you know, the Pro Football Writers Association has already voted Beckham as their offensive rookie of the year, but that is only one of three rookie of the year awards, Lance.
You know, only one of three.
Only one of three. Well, the Pepsi fan vote
correct.
Is
yeah.
another one that's coming out, I believe, on Saturday. I think that comes out on Saturday.
I think you're right, where they name the few candidates and you can go on and vote
yeah.
for that.
Now, they've already narrowed down the finalists, and Beckham is one of the finalists, and voting, I think, closes on the 29th. So I think it's on either the 30th or the 31st that Pepsi announces the
Usually
fan
they
vote.
Do it, I believe, the day before the Super Bowl, don't they do
Which
it the
Which would
night
be the 31st.
Correct.
Which
yeah.
is also the day, or the night, I should say, that the AP gives out the official NFL Rookie of the Year award. So anyway, what I'm trying to say in a very roundabout way is that Beckham's already got one of the three NFL Rookie of the Year awards that are out there. I'm very interested, obviously, to see a week from Saturday if he wins the official one, whether or not he gets the fan vote one. Jeremy Shockey won that one, by the way, some years ago, the only Giant to win the fan vote for the NFL Rookie of the Year. And then, of course, in the game, hey, you just don't want anybody to get hurt. I remember a couple of years ago when Victor Cruz was in the Pro Bowl and caught like a dozen passes
yeah,
and set
game.
A Pro Bowl record. The only thing I kept saying to myself is Tom Coughlin must be at home watching this game saying stop throwing him the ball because he's taking a lot of hits in this game that he doesn't need to take.
And Kyle Rudolph, the Vikings tight end, actually beat him out for MVP.
Bad decision.
Cruz put up some big numbers.
Well, Cruz set a Pro
yeah.
Bowl reception record and clearly should have been the MVP, but Rudolph, I think, caught a touchdown. And it was a low-scoring game, or whatever the case may be. I know that he got the touchdown. Cruz did not for all the numbers he put up. And so Rudolph got the MVP, which I thought was a total ripoff.
Well, Beckham obviously has an opportunity to make some noise. Whether or not the Giants want him to play the entire game or not, I'm sure he's going to have quite an impact on this contest.
The only thing I would say about this, Lance, and I would like to believe, and I know it's naive for me to say this, but I would like to believe that, you know, in a Pro Bowl where there's going to be a lot of highlights, a lot of showcasing, a lot of showboating, et cetera, I could see, like, fellow players on the Pro Bowl team saying to Beckham, hey, try to duplicate that catch that you made against Dallas. And I could see him trying to make a super-duper one-up spectacular grab in the game. That's the nature of how this game gets
of
played.
Well, they're supposed to have fun.
Okay, the problem when you do that, is you get reckless and you get careless and you do something that you really shouldn't do. So, again, my concern from Tom Coughlin's perspective as Beckham's real head coach is that don't go out there and do anything foolish.
And I'm sure he understands that mindset. I'm sure the Giants have told him about that. And the rules and regulations that are in place, Paul, at least prevent guys from laying out each other or really being too physical in a game like this. It's supposed to be for the fans. It's supposed to be able to showcase the stars, and they're supposed to have fun at the end of the day. I understand you don't want anybody to get hurt, but you'd really have to go far back to come up with an example where somebody intentionally went after another guy in an All-Star game.
Well, that won't happen, but, you know, nonetheless, it's still football, and we've seen so many non-contact injuries over the course of the last couple of years, guys with ACLs, MCLs, Achilles. You know, it's still a game, and look, I happen to like the old Pro Bowl when the AFC played the NFC because there were teams to root for. I'm not a fan of the new fantasy football Pro Bowl at all. But it exists. I'm glad that Beckham got honored by getting selected and is going to go. But, if I'm the Giants, I certainly want to make sure that he comes out healthy.
Though the way Michael Irvin made his selections, you would think it is the AFC versus the NFC. He took every single Dallas Cowboy, which is not necessarily a surprise. So you're going to have Tony Romo and company with Odell Beckham and friends, as I like to call it, to make up that entire team. And they'll be going up against Chris Carter's crew, who has a number of Colts, obviously, starting with Andrew Luck.
You know what's funny? A lot of guys over the course of the years, especially the last decade or so, and it's one of the reasons that they keep fussing with the Pro Bowl, is that guys turn it down.
Correct.
Tony Romo, look, I'm going to tell you flat out. Look at the season this guy had. Look at all he fought through. Excuse me. The fact that he had to miss a game. The fact that he played hurt. If I'm Jerry Jones, do I really want him playing in this game? Seriously. I'm not trying to be a wise guy now. He put up great numbers, and he deserved to go in terms of his merit. And I admire the way he was able to fight through injuries and at the end of the season help drag the Cowboys into the playoffs. He certainly deserves to go on merit. But should Tony Romo have turned down the game on the basis that, hey, he went through a physically very difficult season? Is it necessary for him to play in this game? Seriously?
Well, I don't think it's necessary for anybody to play in this game, but you know there's financial connections
to
a contest like this. No, but there's a lot of things. Pride is one of them. They want to take their family. I mean, there's so many different reasons why
guys go to this game. If I'm Jerry Jones, I'm telling Tony Romo, you're not going. It's just that simple. And look, it does happen. It does happen. Well,
of course, the non-contact injuries.
You know, where players will hear from owners or coaches and say, look, it happens in baseball too. And they'll say, look, you're not going. You're declining that invitation. If I'm Jerry Jones, I'm telling Tony Romo he can't go to play in this game.
But there is a difference, Paul, in fairness. Having the All-Star game in the middle of the season when you know you have a second half of the season where you need that guy healthy versus the season's over. So you
Understood.
Never want to see anybody get hurt. If he gets hurt, though, worst case scenario, you still have a few months till OTA start and the off-season programs.
The difference that I would say is that an accumulation of injuries to your quarterback, and Romo's getting older and the injuries continue to pile up, I think – quite frankly, I think his window of durability is closing. I wouldn't let him buy.
Well, but here's the other thing. From the NFL perspective, considering they've made so many changes and sometimes fans are turned away from a game like this because there's not a lot riding, if you remove the big-time stars and you have Andy Dalton, for example, Andy Dalton was, what, the seventh quarterback who had to be replaced. So you don't want to get to the ninth or tenth replacements.
And by the way, okay, and I've got some people who hit me up on Twitter on this. Really? Andy Dalton?
That's what happens when guys pull out.
Eli Manning had a Pro Bowl caliber season. And in fact, if you look at any of his numbers across the board, he knocks Andy Dalton out of the water. It boggles my mind, and I think it was the residue from the nearly 30 interception year that Manning had the year before, where people were so down on him. I think there was a lot of residue that stuck on Eli this year because Eli Manning had one of the best three or four seasons of his career in 2014. He was Pro Bowl caliber. He was sensational. Now, again, do I want Eli Manning to go to Pro Bowl and get hurt? Obviously not. But does Eli Manning deserve an opportunity or a ticket to that Pro Bowl? Is he one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL this year? How far did they go down? Seven? They went seven?
Dalton was the seventh replacement, I believe.
Seventh replacement?
Replacement, correct. Meaning seven guys had pulled out, and then they got down to Dalton
I'm sorry.
At that point. I mean, we're going to have Ryan Lindley in the Pro Bowl?
Eli Manning absolutely, positively is back into the top 10. If you want to get him up a little bit higher, I guess we can debate that because the Giants didn't win enough games to necessarily put him higher. But Eli Manning's back amongst the better quarterbacks in this game, and I find it laughable that Andy Dalton got an invite over him.
Well, I'd be curious. I don't know off the top of my head, Paul, and maybe you do. When they go through the replacements, I don't know, is that based on the fan vote?
No.
Have the order? How do they determine the replacements? I'd have to look that up.
When the mathematical computation is finished and they get the team vote, the player vote, and the fan vote, and they have a balance of how they weigh those votes, when the Pro Bowl voting is closed and it's all calculated, everybody gets put in order by the calculation process. And then in order, these are the guys who go, and then your first alternate, second alternate, third alternate, fourth alternate, in order by the mathematical process.
So with respect to Manning, it was a matter of votes at the end of the day.
Manning was way down, obviously, not even close to the top. JPP, I think, was fourth alternate at defensive end. Funny part about that is he had his 12.5 sacks, okay, which I think put him somewhere in the neighborhood of top 10 in the league in sacks. Was he 12?
Should be. I'll look it up.
Somewhere in that area. But how about this? JPP was second to J.J. Watt amongst defensive linemen in tackles this season. He had 77 tackles, second in the NFL in tackles, and yet he was that low. Again, I know we didn't have a great first half of the season, and people want to see more sacks and don't want to see the run-stopping plays. But JPP probably deserved a lot more consideration than he got, too.
Well, it gets back to it being a popularity contest. That's what happens at the end of the day. It's not so much how a guy does number-wise. And what you just threw out is another example how JPP doesn't get enough credit when it comes to stopping the run. Because if he's up there in tackles, clearly he's not just the guy that pressures the quarterback. He has versatility.
With 77 tackles, he had to hit somebody to get him.
Correct.
They don't hand out those stats.
Absolutely. To answer your question, JPP was eighth overall in sacks this season.
Okay.
Top 10.
And so that apparently didn't do enough. The 77 tackles didn't do enough to get him more consideration. Do I think that he had a Pro Bowl season? Well, look, when you compare him to the JPP of 3 years ago, you say, well, he's not that player right now. But when you compare him to the stats of all the other defensive ends in the league this year, you know what? I think he was probably a lot closer to Pro Bowl caliber than people thought.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We'll throw out the question that Paul posed to the audience. Who do you think may have missed out on the Pro Bowl, is deserving of that award with respect to the New York Giants? Eli Manning comes to mind when you look at all the quarterbacks that pulled out. JPP is another guy. He was named as an alternate, but do you think there were a few other Giants that deserve some consideration when it comes to who's in and who's out of the Pro Bowl? We'll take your calls. We'll take your tweets on that throughout the course of this program. As I mentioned off the top, former Giants corner Sam Madison will join us at the bottom of the hour to reflect on his Giants career. He also played for Giants defensive coordinator Steve Spagnuolo during his first stint with the team. Right now, let's open up the phone lines. Want to try to get to as many as you as possible before we touch on Sam Madison and company. Let's start with Chris in Bayonne. Chris, what's happening? Welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. Good to hear you again. First-time caller, by the way.
Well, good to have you aboard. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I've been listening to you. Paul, I go back to the 70s with the Giants at the games, so you and I have a lot of history. Yeah, we do. I really believe that JPP should be a Pro Bowl, and I believe Eli Manning should be a Pro Bowl. Maybe not a first team, but at least an alternate anyhow. Okay, I think they both deserve it. And I really hate to say this because the Giants are in my heart. I don't think there's another Giant on the team that deserves to be in the Pro Bowl, and that's just the way it is. You know, we have some good players, we have some good young players, but I don't think any Pro Bowlers. And I'm real happy to see Spagnuolo's back as coach. I just wanted to mention that. He's been a guy that I've always enjoyed watch coaching and having his guys play. So I'll leave it with that, and thanks for taking my call.
Well, I appreciate the phone call, Chris. Thanks so much for weighing in. And a lot of people are excited that Steve Spagnuolo is back with the organization. Obviously, his defense has made quite an impact when he helped the team win the Super Bowl. And it's a matter of what the Giants are going to do from a personnel standpoint this offseason, Paul, to get Steve Spagnuolo the pieces that he utilized the first time around.
We spent a lot of time on Tuesday's show, Lance, talking about Spags, his system, and what the Giants need to have on this roster to allow him to do his magic. The bottom line is, folks, everyone's going to expect, because Spags was here with a top 10 defense in 2007 and 2008, and it included the Super Bowl, that it's all going to immediately come to fruition, and he's going to get them right back on top beginning week one of the regular season. I think the thing that we need to keep in mind is you have to have a level head about this. Now, yes, Spags has a pedigree, he has a resume, he's got the respect, the knowledge, and everything else that you need to be successful. He's proven that. But this is not Michael Strahan, OCU Manure, and Justin Tuck on this defensive line, okay? This is not Antonio Pierce playing middle linebacker. I mean, there are different faces here. And these guys will have to learn Spags' system, just like those guys did. And these guys will not only have to play at a high level like those guys did, the Giants will have to supplement them with some additional players. I'm just saying that getting Spags in here is a good start because he's got the blueprint. Now everything else is going to have to come together. But let me tell you now, if the Giants should happen to lose opening day, and we have no idea who they're going to play, we don't know that yet, but let's say they're on the road and they're in Dallas and they lose 31-17 opening night. Don't be jumping off the boats. Don't be going crazy. It may take a little bit of doing before they get it right.
Well, what happened the first time around with his defense?
First two games.
So there you go.
Gave up over 400 yards a clip, and they got thrashed. And then by week three, it all came together. So understand, folks, this is not done. Giants, best defense in the league. No. He's got to get some things done, including get some players.
Absolutely. In terms of the depth and avoid the injury bug, too, which obviously hit this team very hard. 22 players on IR, a lot of them coming on defense. And as Paul just alluded to, you know, there's not a great deal of familiarity in terms of the roster. Spags knows the organization. The organization knows Spags. But the roster's turned over since he was last here. Mathias Kiwanuka is the only defensive player that has worked under his system. So it's really going to be new from both sides of things.
Yeah, the only thing that you know is that he is a core 4-3 guy, which is what the Giants have played under Tom Coughlin. And, of course, when Perry Fuel was here for the last several years. So they're not going to be dramatically different in terms of a 3-4-4-3 flop. And when teams do that, they basically decide to take the other exit on the highway, and it's a dramatic change. They're not doing that, and good for that, because they don't have the personnel right now to play
correct.
That.
201-939-4513, the telephone number. Let's head back to the lines. Carter is in Delaware. Carter, what's happening? Carter, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, Carter, what's on your mind? What you got?
I wanted to say I'm a first-time caller and listening to the show for a long time.
Appreciate
and,
that.
I definitely agree that Eli Manning should be in the Pro Bowl. It was ridiculous to see Matthew Stafford and Andy Dalton in there ahead of him. But, also, I just wanted to call, talk about the offensive line for a second, because I got to go to two games this season, and unfortunately, they were the Philadelphia Eagles game in Philly and the San Francisco game in MetLife, and it was just hard to watch that O-line just get thrashed in both of those games. I want to get back to the old school, put your fingers in the dirt, offensive line, old school New York Giants O-line, and just move guys out of the way. And it was just really frustrating to watch at times this season.
Well, you know, the Giants themselves, when we heard from Jerry Reese and Tom Coughlin and John Mara just a few weeks ago after the season ended, I think they spelled it out pretty clearly. Their top priority is to continue to fortify and enhance this offensive line. So I don't think you're off base. And if you know me, you know that's where I'm going anyway.
And that Philadelphia Eagles game that Carter was alluding to, and Carter, appreciate the phone call, that was one of the roughest performances for the Giants' offensive line this season. But I will say this, I think as the season progressed, that we could put as much stock or as little stock as you want in the opponents down the stretch, Paul. But the offensive line, I think, got better as the season progressed later on in the season. Do they still need to improve? Absolutely. Everyone in the organization will admit that. But there was a little bit more continuity late in the season as opposed to what we saw in the middle when they were plagued by the injury bug.
That is true. And the other thing that we really have to add is that Eli was sacked only about 24 times this year, which actually isn't a bad number. That's a respectable number. I think you could certainly make a case outside of that one Philly game where it was a total disaster. The pass protection was actually pretty good this year. It was good enough to win, okay? It was the run blocking that was just absolutely up and down week to week. You just never knew what you were going to get. And so that part of it has to be improved if the Giants are going to be a playoff team.
2013, Manning was sacked 39 times. They gave up 40 sacks as a team because Curtis Painter took a sack. This year, as you mentioned, they surrendered 30 sacks. Manning, though, took 28 of them. So compared to 2013, which was very rough in terms of pass protection, that was well documented. They made strides in that category. When you look at him taking 28 sacks, listen, you want that number low. Ideally, everybody wants that number low. But to put things in perspective, it was much better than what 2013 showcased.
And I don't have the quarterback hits number. And as you know, you've often heard me talk about Lance, sacks aren't the only barometer. You really do need to look at that quarterback hits number. I don't have that number handy with me right now, and I should, and I apologize for that. But I guarantee you, Eli's quarterback hit number was an even lower ratio this past year than it was the year before, because not only did he get sacked a ton, he got plastered a ton.
Yeah. Took a lot of hits, and he also got rid of the ball quicker this season, so that certainly helped under the new offense. Let's head back to the phone lines, and we have Dre in Atlanta. Dre, welcome to the program. What you got?
Hey, what's going on, Lance? Hey, P-Dot.
This has been
getting on my nerves. I'm tired of hearing it. I'm about to put this Corey Washington thing to bed. Yes, the brother has talent. He showed up in preseason, but I'm going to compare here to Cruz. Everybody was raving about Cruz in the preseason, what he did to the Jets and what he did to everybody in the preseason. But one thing that our fans are not listening to is what Coach said. Compare the two. When they was talking about Cruz, Coach was like, he does the same thing in practice. He amazes us with his dedication, his work ethic, and he performs in practice. So it's not a surprise to us to see what he does out in real game situation, because he does it in practice. Corey Washington believed his own hype, his own news clippings, listening to the fans, and got a little above himself because – from what I've been to one preseason of practice, one practice this summer, and you know, other than their height, I was like, "What's good about this kid?"
Let me address that.
He didn't put that same dedication.
Let me address that. Corey Washington had a sensational summer camp and a sensational preseason, and that's what earned him a spot on the 53-man roster. Let's not take that away from him. But as we've said a thousand times on this show all season long, Lance, you have to perform in practice each and every day during the season. You also have to make sure you do all your film work right and you get your homework right when the coach gives you his written tests every week. And those things, in conjunction with what you do when you do get into a game, those are the things that will get you snaps on Sundays. And you also, of course, have to perform very well on special teams if you're going to be a reserve wide receiver. You've got to kind of force your way into the lineup by kicking butt on special teams. Tom Coughlin made it very clear to us, okay, you didn't have to take my word for it. If you didn't want to believe me, that's okay. Because Tom Coughlin himself, when pushed on the issue later on in the season, said Corey Washington knows the plays, he's getting his homework done, but special teams work has to improve, and his practice habits during the season had to improve a little bit as well. And until all three of those things are up to par, he's not going to be part of the regular game day rotation. It's that clear. Okay?
Let's put an end to all of this. We're glancing over what Coach is saying. Yeah, if he improves, because it's going to be hard this year for him to make the roster, because Cruz coming back, you still got Ogletree on the roster, Jernigan's coming back.
Hold on.
You know, he's going to have to play.
Hold on. Washington is signed through next season. So he has a leg up, okay? He has a leg up in terms of who's going to come back or who's not going to, because he is signed. Now, he's earned a spot on this year's 53. He's going to be given now a chance in the summer to compete again, and he goes in with a small edge on anybody else because he's already been here.
He knows the offense.
But, trust me when I tell you, if he falls flat on his face during preseason and the training camp, that roster spot is not just given to you. It's not locked up with a master lock. I mean, he's going to have to compete. But you'd have to believe that in his second year he will mature some. He will understand that from Division II Newberry to the NFL was a huge jump, and maybe there were maturity issues that needed to take place. You'd like to believe that Corey Washington will get all of this other stuff right and show you that the guy we saw last August was a legitimate player. That's what you'd like to believe.
I'm looking for that. One last thought. Now, we talked about Spags coming back. One thing that I think will rejuvenate the defense, since there's only Kiwi that's played under him, with Spags' coaching style, you're only limited to your imagination. And I think for some of the defensive players that for the first time playing under him, there'll be a breath of fresh air, and they'll be amazed on how much they can get accomplished on the fly. If they see something, they can come back, and he'll take their word for them, trust them, and put it into action and see the success. So I think we may not be, you know, a top two defense, but I think we're going to make strides. We're going to fall, but I don't think we're going to break. I think we're going to have a better year this year on defense also. But thanks for taking my call, you guys.
You got it, Drew, and that's the goal of the organization. Great. Obviously, they want a new voice in so that he can bring something different out of the defense and try to mimic what occurred when they went on that Super Bowl run. As Paul mentioned, a lot of it is going to depend on the type of personnel that's also brought in during the course of this offseason. We don't know what the depth chart's going to look like. We have an idea of what the core is going to look like, but remember, the Giants have a lot of cap space. There's a number of free agents, and like every team goes through every single offseason, there's turnover. I mean, that's nothing new when it comes to the NFL, Paul. You can't expect one roster to be one way and then you just carry everybody over. You're going to see personnel groupings change. And when you look at the amount of injuries that took their toll on the Giants' defense last season, you want to make sure that you have a little bit more depth, and also the guys that you bring back hopefully will be able to stay healthy. Part of that, obviously, is luck.
By the way, just to address the guys who are signed, unrestricted free agents on offense do include wide receivers Jarrell Jernigan and Kevin Ogletree. The gentleman had mentioned he thought that Ogletree would be ahead of Washington on the depth chart. Well, there's no guarantee he's going to be re-signed. He is a free agent as we speak.
Well, speaking of Steve Spagnuolo, and we're talking about the new Giants defensive coordinator, and we will be getting to more of your phone calls momentarily. We are now joined by a man who has played under Spags during his Giants tenure from 2006 to 2008, and we welcome in former Giants corner Sam Madison to the program. Sam, Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino, appreciate the time. How's everything?
Hey, man, just getting off this football field, just coaching up these college kids, getting them ready for the draft and the combine. So just nonstop work since the last time you guys saw me doing training camp with the Giants up there.
I tell you what, Sam, Nile Shah here at the Giants Internet Department has put up a picture of you to promote the appearance that you're making on today's show. It's on Twitter. It's of you wearing your proud Giants 29, apparently right after the Super Bowl victory in Arizona, hands raised in a victorious jubilation type of excitement. And you know the funny part about it is you've been wearing that smile every day ever since.
Yeah, man, definitely been playing it ever since, man. It was a fun time, you know, with that picture, you know, being able to share with the fans. You know, just being the way that they accepted me when I came up there in 06, you know, tried to, you know, really just be that stabilizer in the secondary for those guys. Played a lot of games in that giant blue color, man, but, you know, made a lot of friendships along the way. And, you know, it just was fun to have that experience. And you talk about the smile, and every single time that the Super Bowl rolls around for the last few years, it's just been really special for me to say that I had opportunity to really, you know, accomplish that goal that a lot of guys are trying to achieve with when you're talking about coming into the National Football League. But the organization, I mean, first class, and thank you to them for taking a chance on me after spending a long career down here in South Florida.
And, Sam, you were a member of that defense that really was the identity during that Super Bowl run, and you played under Steve Spagnuolo. Talk about what was so unique about that defense, and why did everything start to come together, especially after those two rough games to start the 2007 campaign?
Yeah, man. I think where, you know, Coach Spags came in, you know, we knew when coming from Philly that, you know, they had a very awesome defense. But you got to understand, going into that season, you know, Michael Strahan was on the verge of retiring. He came out. He didn't come back and didn't have opportunity to really pick up Coach Spags' defense until he got back because he wasn't there for training camp. So once we added that implemented Mike back into the defensive scheme, and everybody was learning on the fly. You know, Coach Spags had been in that system for a while. He knew the ins of the outs, but, you know, having an opportunity to really put it together as a defensive coordinator, it was uncharted territory for him. But he had players in every position that was veteran. We had depth throughout the course of that year because, you know, we lost a lot of players that we were really dependent on, but guys stepped right up, even all the way down to the wire the last game of the season and going into those first couple of playoff games. But I think the thing that really hammered home for our defense and really for Coach Spags was we were almost ended up, I think it was 0-3. We were in Washington on the road, goal line stance, and, you know, we have been talking about things that occurred to us and happened to us in those first couple of games where if you would have just did the technique that Coach Spags, you know, gave us and the coaches gave us, we would have been victorious in some of those games. But just so happened, Kavika Mitchell, a guy that normally played middle linebacker and coming from Kansas City, we moved into outside linebacker. He came and he made those plays that we've been looking for early on in the season, and it kind of took off from there. And the rest is history when you talk about winning the Super Bowl and winning 11 straight on the road.
Sam, let me ask you about Spags' defense. First of all, what is your impression in terms of what he does so well to put players in a position to win? We understand you got to have talented players. I mean, let's face it, the game is still won and lost by the players on the field. But what is it about his scheme that, as a player, you like very much? How hard is it to learn? And then I think the other part to this question, and I'm going to give you a long time to answer it, his ability to improv and to make adjustments and to have give and take with the players as he makes adjustments was always, in my mind, one of his biggest strengths. Do you agree?
And you just hit it right on the head. I mean, as soon as you asked the question, the one thing that I was going to say is making adjustments. And when I talked about, you know, winning that Super Bowl with the type of players that we had in the secondary, in the linebacking core, even at the defensive line position, you know, the good part about it was when Spags came in and the system that he came from in Philly, you know, he usually blitzed a lot of linebackers. We didn't have to do that with the New York Giants. We had four down linemen, and we got after people all the time, and we put pressure on them, and we utilized the linebackers and the secondary to be able to cover up those speed guys on the outside. You know, it was a work in progress, but I can say the one thing that you hit on was it was the game in-game adjustments, being able to come to the sideline and make those adjustments, bringing guys together, and the players were able to pick it up and continue to be successful on the football field. So it's definitely one of those things to where him being able to be on the football field, and we always talk about defensive coordinators being on the field versus being up in the box.
Yeah.
This was the first time for me having a defensive coordinator on the football field. He understands his defense more than anybody else, and for him to be on the sideline and to be able to show those pitchers and make those in-game adjustments, that is one of, I would say, the best thing that Steve Spagnuolo can do is make those adjustments. But having the personnel and having the insight and the foresight to do it in practice ahead of time and anticipating what an offense would try to do to you and have those guys prepared, ready to go. And one of the plays that I can really go back to right now is we worked with this thing where we would blitz the cornerback. We blitz the cornerback. So what we said, we was like, okay, Tom Brady is going to see that. And we did it in the Super Bowl. We faked the blitz, which it was me. I would fake the blitz, and then I would go back and undercut the number one wide receiver. Tom Brady saw it. But because we had and we were able to get pressure, it was a third down blitz. We were able to get up the football field, and he called things at the right time to give us opportunity to make plays and get off the field on third down.
The defensive lineman used to tell me, Sam, that sometimes he'd come over there and you guys as players would talk to Spags, and you'd actually, like, for lack of a better term, draw something up in the dirt. You know, and so I just wonder, and you just cited a play, but are there other instances where you can remember literally that you guys just pulled a play out of nowhere, went out there and it just started to happen for you? I mean, I guess you kind of already described one of those. I find that to be incredibly refreshing. I find it to be exciting. I find it to be fun, because you know what? Football's supposed to be fun, and that's part of, I think, also what makes him a good coach.
And that is really what makes him a good coach, and being fun and throwing stuff up in the dirt. But it's still within the scheme of what we did.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, Antonio Pierce, how many sacks can we say that Antonio has? It's not many, because we never really saw him blitz a lot. Is that correct?
Kavika Mitchell was more a blitzer than Pierce was.
Correct. And when you talk about we started drawing stuff in the dirt, and when you talk about the defensive linemen and having those veteran players, Michael Strahan is like a coach on the field. Because in Steve, Coach Spagnuolo, he always talked about, hey, guys, I need you to know the defense better than I do, because you're going to be on the football field and you're going to be able to see things that I'm not going to be able to see and we're not going to be able to pick up. And for instance, one of the things that you always talk about, we always saw Antonio walk up into the line of scrimmage when quarterbacks would get ready to call a audible or something. We've seen that all the time, and he'll go back and he'll make a signal. So, and when you talk about that improv and throwing stuff up in the dirt, one game, in one instance, he came over to the sideline. And he's like, Coach, when he's coming, he's making all these checks. I'm walking up in the line. Okay, Antonio, you never blitz. When you walk up in the line and you get ready to walk back, this time you blitz right up the middle of the football field. And because of the way that the offensive line was turning and the defensive line was able to communicate with Coach Spags, and Antonio is seeing this stuff because in his coverage or whatever, it's putting him in a bad position. He comes up and he gets a sack. So, you know, those are some of the things, as him being able to trust the players that he have on the football field, giving them a plan to go out there and execute, come back being able to relay what guys are telling him and what they are seeing, and making a game time adjustment to make whatever it is impossible for the opposing offense to stop, or if we need to make the adjustments to make them off balance. That's the things that he's able to do.
Talking with former Giants corner Sam Madison. And Sam, you mentioned that Spags was very creative when he was here as his first stint as defensive coordinator, but you said the importance of that front four really made the difference when it came to that defense. And, you know, a lot of people are starting to speculate, well, how will his defense carry over to the personnel on the roster currently with respect to the Giants? So how important is the front four in a Steve Spagnuolo defense?
Well, I'm going to go this as well. You know, anybody who has a front four makes it's really easy to put stuff together and for you to make plays. We go and we look at why the Seattle Seahawks won the Super Bowl last year and why were they so dominant. And we're going and we're looking at this year, the same thing. They don't have to blitz much. You know, they only rush four guys and then they have seven guys. Guess what, guys? There's only five guys can go out in a route on a regular basis, and when you have a front four like that, you're only going to pretty much get three or four out. So you have seven guys covering three or four. So when no matter who it is, if you have a very good defensive front four, it makes everything easier. But I can say I have an opportunity to do my coaching internship in St. Louis, where all of a sudden he had to revamp that defense and bring in guys. He has an eye for those playmakers. I just look at right now and what a couple of those defensive line, George Selvey, who was down at Dallas. That was a guy that Steve Spagnuolo brought in. And you look at Quinn up there with St. Louis. He has that eye for those guys. And I go even look at Dave Tomlinson, who came in and he played some very good pass rush downs for us, even during that Super Bowl run. He has trust, and he's going to put those guys in a situation to where they can make the plays, but making sure that they understand exactly what they're doing. He's going to put the onus on them to go out and study their playbook and make sure that they're on all pages with everybody. When you talk about going out on the football field and going out and executing. So, you know, it's just one of those situations where he's going to build a scheme for the players that he has, and he's going to put guys in situations to make plays. So that's what it's going to all come down to, because there's going to be plays to be made in this scheme, because he's going to overload one side, and now all of a sudden you're going to be in a position to make plays. That's the great part about it. You never know who's going to be week to week going to have opportunity to make plays, but when it comes to fruition, you're going to have to make that play, or he's going to put somebody else in there to do it for you.
Sam Madison joins us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Final question from me, Sam. Realistically speaking, and I'm trying to tell the fans, as much as you guys were a top-10 defense for 2 years under Spags and you won a Super Bowl championship, it doesn't just happen with a click of the fingers. I mean, you need players. They got to understand what it is that he wants, and then they have to execute. So what is a realistic expectation for this Giants defense, of which, as Lance just mentioned, Mathias Kiwanuka, who may or may not be back, is the only guy who played under Spags before? What's the realistic expectation for a new group of defensive players to be able to sufficiently pick up the Spags system before they've got it down?
I will say just understanding where the plays will be made. They have to make plays now. And, you know, I've been up there the last couple, and I watch you guys, you know, on my phone. I get all the alerts still. I follow you. And there were a lot of plays and a lot of situations. You're going to have to get off blocks. It's going to be a situation where you're going to be one-on-one. And like you said, yeah, a Spagnuolo's defense is not going to work unless you have playmakers to go out there and make it. Do I think that you have them on your roster? Yes, they are there, you know. But – it still comes down to playmakers making plays. And these guys, they're going to be in situations to where they're going to have to do it. He's going to put some guys in one-on-one coverage, and he's going to zone the other side. The opposing offense, they're going to see exactly what he's doing, but it could be a mirage. So that is some of the things where he's going to be able to pick up where they're deficient in, not having opportunity, just being able to disguise stuff. He's not afraid to disguise stuff. He's going to make a football team adjust whatever their strengths are. We're going to cover up those strengths, and you're going to have to beat us with something opposite. So the one thing that you guys are right on with, we made plays when it came time for us to make plays in that scheme and in that system. And the same thing is going to happen for these guys. I like, you know, when you talk about only Mathias Kiwanuka have an opportunity to play in that scheme and that system. We're not really sure because if he's going to come back and play. But there's a lot of good players on that roster that I feel that he's going to be able to touch home with. And those guys will seize the opportunity where they can make plays in this defense, because that's what it really only took for us, was to finally see, wow, if I just run through like we've been talking about all in practice, I'll make that play. So it's going to all fall down on these players making the play when he makes those calls.
Sam, before we let you go, I know you alluded to it at the beginning when you first joined us, but what are you up to right now? I know you're down in Miami. You've worked with the Dolphins. You're also involved in coaching to a certain degree. Why don't you just tell the audience what you're up to since you retired as a football player?
Since I've retired, I've been doing radio and television down here with the Finsiders, with the Dolphins. You know, we have our own integrated system. I'll be out at Radio Row I'm leaving Monday. I'll be out there doing interviews and everything. But other than that, I coach youth football. This year, my football team, we won all our games. We lost a game. We won our Super Bowl. Then we won the regionals, the state championship under the Dolphins system. But I coach college kids during this time, getting ready for the combine and the draft and their all-star game. So I have a couple of guys that played in the NFL Bowl. I have a couple of guys that's in the Senior Bowl right now. And when they finish, they'll come back and we'll just knock this thing out and try to get all these drills down. But I really like coaching. I have three kids right now myself, 11-year-old, a 10-year-old, I mean a 9-year-old girl, and then a 4-year-old boy. So, you know, they keep me busy doing youth sports. But coaching is what I really, really like. And hopefully one day, you know, if I keep going and I keep getting better doing my coaching internship, you guys may see me in college or at the national football level one day.
Very nice. Well, the Giants actually are going to Miami next season, so I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but that means you're going to have to see Paul DeTino down in Miami next season, Sam.
Hey, I love to see it. Wherever I go, we always have good conversations. We always have very good respect for each other. But this will be the first time, you know, since me being in the National Football League since 97, that the Giants will be down here. I remember the last time, which was 07-08, that year we went to the Super Bowl, the Giants were supposed to come down here. We ended up playing over in London. So a lot of Giant fans down here. The stadium will be packed. It will be rocking. And, you know, as you guys know, getting Super Bowls is really big. So we'll have a little construction while you guys are going, because we're moving our stadium from 76,000 down to 66,000 and moving the field 25 feet closer to make it a more intimate stadium for football and soccer fans versus it used to being when the last time you guys were down here, it was a multi-purpose stadium.
Sam, I warn you one thing now. When we come down there to see you next year, next season, you better be wearing that giant Super Bowl ring or I'm going to give you some grief.
I was on television rocking it this past weekend. Listen, my smile gets a little bit bigger every single time I put it on. So you better believe I definitely will have it on rocking and rolling.
All right, Sam. Listen, I really appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Sam.
Thanks, guys. Have a good day. I'll see you.
You as well. Sam Madison, former quarter for the New York Giants, kind enough to reminisce about his playing days with the Giants and some great stuff on Spags' defense, what made it so unique, and how he utilized different personnel.
You know, the interesting part about that team was not only did they have a lot of really good players, but the veteran leadership of which Sam was a part of. You know, he alluded to Michael Strahan, who everybody thought was going to retire before that season, but then came back and played, and certainly he was a huge component on the field and on the sidelines. But I mentioned R.W. McQuarters earlier. We mentioned Sam Madison. Antonio Pierce came up in the conversation. Kavika Mitchell was another very important part to that team, providing leadership skills and experience. You know, that's the one thing that I'm interested to see on this year's team. As Spags comes in and takes over this defense, we think that John Beeson's going to be healthy, and that's going to be a very important component. Let's not make any mistake about that because of his ability and his leadership skills. We'd like to think that Antre Wall's going to be back, but we don't know. The Giants have said if the price is right, they'll bring him back, but they'd like to have him. That would be a big component if they can get him. You know you get leadership skills out of DRC. You know you get some leadership skills out of Colin Jenkins. I mean, there are some guys on this D who have the ability to fill those leadership roles that Sam was talking about, because those are the guys who become the glue and the conduits between the rest of the players on defense and the defensive coordinator on the sideline. Those are the guys who, as we said, draw up the plays in the dirt.
Absolutely, and he relies on his players for feedback, which
he
is
does.
Important as any part of the defense. One player that I'm actually interested to see how he utilizes, and I'm sure Spags is foaming at the mouth.
I should mention McClain, too. I don't want to skip Jameel
McClain.
No, McClain,
another
guy,
obviously. And if Beeson gets hurt based on his track record, McClain's a guy who knows the system and has played multiple positions at linebacker, and it's a good segue to the point that I was going to bring up, Devon Kennard, somebody that can really be moved around. I mean, Spags is, I'm sure, very excited to utilize him.
Remember how he utilized, and you heard Sam say that Mitchell was an inside linebacker when he came to the Giants. He became the weak side backer in Spags' system and became a straight-ahead blitzer who would attack the line of scrimmage, not necessarily only on pass downs, but he was a run blitzer. And he made a lot of hits at the line and behind the line, was a big part of making key plays for that defense. I see Devon Kennard being the new Kavika Mitchell type in Spags' system.
All right, let's reopen up the phone lines. I know a number of you were holding while we had Sam Madison on. Really appreciate the patience. Let's go back to Jeff in Rhode Island. Jeff, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Doing well, Jeff. What's on your mind?
Okay. Paulie, I called you Tuesday, and I asked you if you'd be able to come up with a couple of names at linebacker for the Senior Bowl that the Giants might be interested in. Would you be able to do that?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I have the Senior Bowl rosters right here, north and south. I remembered the call. You know,
he broke down film, too, in his time off.
Good job. Good job, buddy.
didn't quite have the opportunity to do that yet. On the south squad, now, I don't know what colors these guys are going to be, because everybody has these nouveau uniforms. For all I know, they may be rainbow
I'm
colors.
I'm sure the audience will be able to manage that. We have faith in them.
But when you're looking at the South squad, there's a couple of guys outside linebackers that I'm curious to take a look at. I haven't obviously researched them yet, but I want to see what they do in the game. There's Lyndon Trail out of Norfolk State. That's an FCS school. 6'6", 262. He's kind of a tweener. Okay.
Yeah. I've heard of that name.
Okay.
Yeah.
Number 97 on the south. Jot that one down. I want you to also jot down another outside linebacker, Lorenzo Molden from Louisville, number 94. Yeah. Genio Grissom out of Oklahoma, another outside linebacker you might want to take a look at. Arkansas's got a quick guy named Matrell Spite, number 47. He's 6 feet, 232. He's a little bit on the smaller side. But those are some of the outside backers you'd want to look at from the south. On the north side, you'd want to look at interesting player, Zach Hodges out of Harvard. He wouldn't be a high pick. He might be a more of a middle-round guy. 6'3", 242. He's number 96 on the north side. Was there somebody else here I wanted to look at? Texas, Jordan Hicks, number 53. 6'1", 241. These are some of the outside backers you'll see in the game. Again, I haven't done research on them. Just I know that they're going to be there, and obviously, if they're invited to the Senior Bowl, they have something to offer. So take a look at some of those guys and see what you think. You know I will.
Okay, buddy. Thank you for the information. And,
sure thing.
I'll check it out Saturday afternoon. Have a good day.
All right, Jeff, sounds good. We'll be testing Jeff's knowledge on the linebackers come next week when he calls back in. We know what you know. We want to know what Jeff in Rhode Island
The key is, Jeff, and I don't know if you have a VCR, DVD recorder,
VCR,
or DVR.
VCR, boy, if you have a VCR still.
Whatever you got. Whatever you got. Here's the important thing that you want to do. Record the Senior Bowl. Fans, I can't stress this enough. Record the Senior Bowl, because even if you don't see it or you don't have a chance to scout it going in, what may happen is after the draft, you know, you'll say, well, okay, the Giants got this guy, or the Giants got that guy, and they'll tell you, well, he played in the Senior Bowl. Then, a couple of months later, you could always go back and then take a look at what the guy did in the Senior Bowl and get a little flavor for what it was he does as a player.
And
so it's cool to have the Senior Bowl. This is a big deal.
And you've perfected the art of rewind, fast forward. I mean, nobody does it quicker than you.
Do you know how many remote control
I can only imagine.
I have gone through over the years? Not good.
They have yet to build one that can actually withstand the pressure that you put on it.
I need one of these commercial deals that the team has, you know? And they've got everything on the computer, and they can, you know, I'm dealing with primitive DVR recorders at home.
You got the beta deck right at home and everything. You got the old
hey,
school.
Hey, it works.
There
That's
you
the
go.
Bottom line. It works. I see what I need to see.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Let's try to squeeze in another caller or two before we wrap up the program. Ernest is in Connecticut. Ernest, what's happening?
Okay. Good day, guys. How's everything today?
Doing well, Ernest. How's everything with you?
I want to talk about Spagnuolo. I don't see how they can make a case for him coming. How can you get rid of Perry Fuel and then you bring in Spagnuolo? I can't see the difference. I mean, what is he going to bring different? I mean, you know, they had a Super Bowl run, but he had all those superstars on the line of scrimmage. You had Antonio Pierce. He had a very good team. He doesn't have that now. So So what is the case for him? His system, you know, if you can remember, when he first took over as the Giants' defensive coordinator, the system that he had was very bad. They gave up a lot of points, and a lot of yards for, like, I think, the first three or four games. Then he left and he went to the Rams, and, well, you know, that was a different situation. But then
he was the head coach there, keep in mind. He wasn't the defensive coordinator there.
And they didn't have a lot of great personnel either.
Correct. They slowly built that defense up through the draft since he's left.
Yeah, so I don't know. What is he bringing different? What is his...
I appreciate the phone call. I don't know that we can answer that question any better than Sam Madison, who gave us about 25 minutes of his time and explained to you all the reasons that makes Spags special. If that didn't spell it out to you, I don't know what we could possibly say. I mean,
and
really?
Keep in mind, there's new personnel on this team. So it's not as if, you know, Spags is working with the same players. It's still a new voice. I'm sure, you know, there's some people out there, and Ernest, you may have been alluding to it, the fact that, well, Spags has been here before. Yes, he's been here before, but it's completely new personnel he's working with. So it's essentially a new defense that is going to get his perspective compared to what the 2007 and 08 group had to deal with. And do we lose Ernest? We may have disconnected him. Okay, Ernest. Well, appreciate the phone call, but that, I think, at least answers the question. I know there was some concern. He was asking, well, you know, why get rid of your current defensive coordinator, go back to the old one? But I don't really look at it as going back to the old system, Paul.
There's nothing stale about putting Spags back.
Absolutely. You have so many new players at this point that they're going to look at this as a completely new voice. It's not as if they're going to be able to go back to 07 because they weren't here. Let's head back to the phone lines. Nuggs is in Minnesota. Nuggs, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, you guys?
Hi.
Doing well, Nugs. What's happening with you?
Yeah, I just I kind of want to piggyback a little bit on what the last caller just said. I mean, I don't want to say happy, but I'm satisfied with the Spags hiring. I mean, I know there had to be a change or whatever, but I kind of want to give this rosy, everything's going to be better, you know, attitude that all the Giants fans have. Kind of, I want to give it the ALS challenge. Like, throw some ice water on that, because at the end of the day, Sam just said, players make plays. You know, veteran leadership. He went on for about 2-3 minutes talking about how Antonio Pierce being basically your quarterback on defense was able to counteract when the quarterback would make a check, then Pierce would make a check. And we haven't seen that in a lot of years. And I think that's what makes John Beeson so attractive, is that he does have the ability to be that type of a leader on the field. But I've been doing some stats on Beeson, and he's only played 24 games in the last 4 years. Okay.
There's durability is a concern, yeah, man. And we talked about this on the show the other day.
Yeah, we did.
You can't ignore that. You have to have a contingency plan. But let me just say this to you, and I'm going to let you finish your point in a second.
Okay.
It does appear, we don't know, but it does appear that there is a pass rush here. They certainly got a good amount of sacks during this past season. And, again, we're under the belief that JPP is coming back.
Albeit late in the season when the season was over.
But we believe that JPP is coming back. We believe DeMontre Moore is going to get better and continue to mature. We think so. So there should be a pass rush. That Spags needs. The other thing he needs is that middle linebacker who has the brains of the operation already up here. We think he's got that in Beeson. Cross your fingers that he stays healthy. We think he's got a blitzing linebacker in Devon Kennard who plays the Kavika Mitchell role, and we think he's got good corners, much like he had back in 2007, 2008, when he had guys like Corey Webster and Sam Madison and then Aaron Ross and guys of that nature. So the components that he used, albeit different names and different players, that he used to make his system work appear like the Giants have a shot to have those components on this defense. So
I agree with you.
Okay.
What I wanted to ask you was this. I've been looking into free agents. We know that that's a fluid situation. Teams might resign guys, but as for now, they're free agents. I see that Walter Thurman is a free agent with us, and Antonio Cromartie is a free agent for the from the Cardinals. I looked at Cromartie. He's played basically almost every game of his career. He seems to be a pretty durable guy. What would you think about us making a run at him? And then as far as Osi being a free agent, and pretty much having that familiarity with Spags, what would you think about bringing him back? And then what do you think about, you know, Mawaluga or maybe Spikes from Buffalo as bringing in some competition? Because personally, I feel what you're saying, Paul. If he plays all 16 games, I'm cool with Beeson. But as for right now, just the fact of the letdown that I've had the last 2 years, you know, I've had my hopes dashed on the jagged rocks of reality. And the truth of it is, we need that brains in the middle of the operation. We need guys who've played basically every game. I'm looking at Spikes. I'm looking at Brinkley. I'm looking at Mawaluga. These are guys who we can bring in to push Beeson, because personally, I'm ready to throw out the baby, the bathwater, and the bathtub as far as Beeson is concerned. But you know, I guess I just have a problem with us having a win now mentality. Because we've got Eli, we've got an offense that's definitely going to put up points, and I just don't want to see this defense breaking down, letting teams get off the hook game after game after game after game. I mean, we went through a 6-game losing streak and then a 7-game losing streak. I mean, I don't want to see that no more, because if our defense can just be middle of the pack, we're going to
All right. We're running out of time. You had three things that you wanted me to comment on. Two of them I remember, so let me get to those quickly. Hold on just a second. OC, his production was really, really down last year, and clearly he's near the end of the road. Whether or not he's even going to play this year, I'm not even sure that that's going to happen. So I think that's something that, you know, you could talk about, but I don't even know if he's going to retire. So let's get that
squared first.
I was
thinking more of bringing him in as maybe a backup, just somebody who would be familiar with Spags' system.
If he were to come back, clearly he would be strictly a role player in a situation.
Well, he was
pass
a third
rusher.
Down specialist with Atlanta this season.
He's
so
nothing
that would
more than
sense.
That at
Correct.
This point in his career. As far as
that would have came in handy for us.
I got you. As far as Beeson's concerned, yes, you have to make contingency plans. I know they feel McLean has shown he can play the position. I still think that Devon Kennard may also be a really good second option at middle linebacker over the course of his career. He may wind up being the guy in the middle. So I don't think that they necessarily want to go out and get a retread middle linebacker to, quote, compete with Beeson. I'm not buying you on that one. And what was the third point?
Well,
you had one you made before that.
Nugs, you were asking about Antonio Cromartie, and I'm just going to jump in here.
Go ahead.
Here's my perspective, at least the way that I would read it if I were Antonio Cromartie. You have Prince and you have DRC. They're penciled in as the starters. Cromartie's an outside corner. You mentioned him as a potential replacement for Walter Thurman. Thurman plays the slot, Paul.
Right.
So I wouldn't think it would make sense from a personnel standpoint.
I agree with you. And by the way, I do think that the Giants are still high on Walter Thurman. He did nothing last year outside of getting hurt that would make them feel otherwise. And I know Thurman told me that he certainly wants to come back. And he understands.
And I think he wants, absolutely.
He understands that he was hurt and he's not going to be able to come back and cash in. He does want to come back here, though. And I've got no problem with bringing him back.
One more question. I'm going to take it off the line. Okay, let's say JPP doesn't want to be reasonable. And let's say the Detroit Lions don't franchise Sue and they say, we're going to let you test free agency. Would you rather bring back JPP and break the bank for him, or break the bank for Ndamukong Suh? And I'll take that off the line.
All right, Nugs, thanks for the phone call.
I'm hedging my bet. I'm franchising JPP, and he's playing for 13.5 this year, and then you'll deal with it as you deal with it. I'm worried about 2015 right now, and I think hedging their bet with the franchise on JPP is absolutely the smartest, most logical way to go.
And at the end of the season, while you can only put so much stock and substance into what people say and do with right at the end of the season, he seemed to indicate that he wants to come back and he has every desire to return. So, I mean, financial issues right now is just pure speculation at this point.
And quite frankly, edge pass rushers are always at a premium, and it's harder to get those guys than it is to get a run stuffer at defensive tackle.
And they have some young defensive tackles who they're looking to build upon. So we'll see how that transpires over the course of the offseason. So that's going to wrap things up for us. We want to thank Sam Madison again for joining us on the program. Some interesting insight on Steve Spagnuolo. So we were appreciative of that. And we will continue to take your phone calls and your tweets starting tomorrow at noon Eastern. Jordan Renan of NJ.com will be joining me. He will cover the Senior Bowl. He is down in Mobile, Alabama for that. So we will get the latest from his perspective on that. Paul, always a pleasure.
Fun show today.
Absolutely. And Paul will be back on Monday breaking it all down. He'll have reaction from the Pro Bowl. He'll be breaking down each and every one of Odell Beckham's catches. Hopefully he'll be able to sleep well on Sunday night, and Odell Beckham, everybody, will stay healthy. So that will determine how happy or what state of mind Paul is in come Monday. Is that a fair synopsis?
Absolutely.
And he will also be breaking down the Senior Bowl too. So a lot to look forward to on Monday's program. For Paul DeTino, I'm Lance Meadow. Appreciate all the calls and tweets. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one.
Well, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
Got through the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Well, get no punch. Broken intercepted.
Touchdown, Zion.